Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kritis. Today is Thursday, July 30th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast, No GDP, No Jobs. Today is Thursday. There was a big data dump. It's our weekly roundup. We typically go over the initial jobless claims, continuing claims, and the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, which of course we are going to get to today. But being the end of July, we did receive the first estimate for the second quarter GDP figure. And that was a doozy, and we're going to talk about that as well. But first, to market performance, we have the dollar, and we've been focusing here on the strength or weakness of the dollar as of late, because this is a big story as to what direction it goes in, because this is going to have huge consequences, regardless of which direction it goes in. Whether we have a potential swan song, as I'm saying, where the dollar rallies to potentially new heights against a basket of currencies, wreaking havoc, especially on emerging markets, which of course contains the vast majority of this planet's population, so that's not a good scenario, before it comes tumbling down, or it might just continue its downward descent, which is also not going to be good, especially for my fellow Americans, because it's just eroding your purchasing power, which is going to happen anyway. So net-net, this is not going to be a good situation or a good scenario. How this all unfolds, how this all plays out, it's going to be a process. This is going to take time, but it's not going to end well. It's not going to end well, and you just have to be prepared. But right now, we have the dollar index, the DXY, trading at $92.62. We haven't been this low in a couple of years. This has been a sharp sell-off, which is why we have been focused on this over the past few weeks. Now, we still have a little bit of ways to go to get back to the lows we saw back in January of 2018, where it was at 88 and change. So again, right now, 92.63, it was 88 and change back in January of 2018. Now, if we get there and we bust through that to the downside, from a technical standpoint, I'm not the best technical chartist guy here, but from looking at a chart, there's not going to be much resistance if we bust through that 88 figure, meaning we can really drop off to the downside if we bust through it. Not going to be a good situation. Time will tell. And of course, what's going to unfold over the remainder of 2020 and through 2021 is anybody's guess of how volatile everything has been. So many uncertainties, the amount of stimulus that is being thrown out at there at the system. Of course, it's not stimulus, but that's what they want to call it. It's just funny money. It's Banana Republic funny money being printed and spent. It's all it's doing. It's attempting to fill a ever-increasing hole. It's not good policy, but that's what we're getting. Geopolitical tensions. So anything can happen when it comes to the dollar. So pay attention to it, but I want to make sure that the audience is aware of it. Now, despite having terrible economic figures released today on the GDP front and on the jobs front, initially, the major indexes were down, and they were down big. And that would be something that you would expect, right, in a climate of reason, rational behavior. When you get these types of bad numbers, you would think, okay, it makes sense that the stock market is going to sell off, what have you. But no, they were able to rally back. And the NASDAQ was actually able to close up for the day. And this is on the back of an historically low GDP figure, of a contraction of negative 32.9%. Now, it would be completely justified to have stocks give back, perfect time for a correction, it makes sense. Nope, NASDAQ, basically, I mean, I joke here with you folks that it's the law that the NASDAQ can't go down. And it can't, I mean, look at it, it can't. It goes down for a partial part of the day, and then, well, we got to get back up there because it's a law that we got to close up in the green for the day. And the NASDAQ did. And of course, as we discussed yesterday, the market wasn't buying that Congress and or the president were going to come down hard on the tech giants, which of course comprise the NASDAQ and has been this market's big boys. It has been the leaders that has been driving the market higher. Again, with the NASDAQ making new highs. We still do not have new highs on the S&P 500 and the Dow, but with the NASDAQ, NASDAQ 100, we do, because of these big boys. So there's no way that Congress is going to go after them with any teeth, and there's no way that Thunder Thumbs is going to go after them with any teeth either, because of his precious stock market. It's not going to happen. You can play tough. You can grandstand in your committee meeting. You can play tough on Twitter, but they're not going to do a damn thing. Too many interests are in alignment here. And that's all it is. It's just a show for the little folk. That's all. Like I said, I wasn't even paying attention to it because it's a joke. They're not going to do anything to those corporations. Whether they should or shouldn't, we can have that debate, but nothing's going to get done. Okay? What do we have right now? Overnight futures. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is flat. The S&P 500 is up about 0.5%. The NASDAQ 100 is up 1.8%. And this is on the back of after-hours earnings report from some of the big boys, of course, beating expectations. Jeez, what a surprise. How is the rest of the world faring with all of this fantastic economic news? Oh, the Japanese markets are down 2.5%, losing 500 points right now. Across the pond, a sea of red in Europe, down anywhere from 2 to 3.5%. Fantastic. They didn't seem to think the 32.9% contraction here in the U.S. was good news. But here in the United States, the worse off it is, better it is for stocks. Fantastic. What about the Australians? What do they think about that? Oh, they're trading down 2% as well. Now, of course, it's just a cash trade. It's still early on in those sessions, so maybe they'll bounce back too like the NASDAQ did here, but I doubt it. But we shall see. On the commodity front, we have WTI trading at $40.11 per barrel. Brent is at $43.48. Natural gas has been on a steady increase, but giving back a little bit right now, $1.84. Gold and silver also giving back some, but right now up slightly. We have spot gold at $1,969 an ounce, and we have silver at $23.64 an ounce. Now, excuse me, with all of this funny money, with Jay Powell continuing to mention, again, the chairman of the Federal Reserve continuing to mention that they're not even thinking about raising interest rates. Well, I mean, and they're going to do whatever it takes because that is now the de facto motto of the Federal Reserve, whatever it takes. Folks, they are destroying these fiat currencies around the world. You want to be diversified? You want to have something that has taken, that has proven the test of time? Well, then you have to look at gold and silver. You have to take a look at it. See if it makes sense for your portfolio and act accordingly. But I do believe that this is a long-term bull market run for precious metals because of what central banks and governments the world over are doing. There's a lot of tailwinds, in my opinion, in this space. Uncle Sam's 10-year Treasury junk note is yielding 0.53%. So we are, again, flirting with recent lows that we have not seen since the March and April sell-off in the stock market. So again, folks, if you're going to see a rising stock market, but you're going to see yields continuing to go down, there is a divergence between these markets. And of course, the bond market is usually the better barometer. People are not buying, the bond market is not buying in to a V-shaped recovery. It's just not. Commodities, which like I said, you might want to have a play with commodities as well because of the inflation that's coming, not because of any great pent-up demand or sustainable demand over the short to midterm when it comes to commodities. But if you're going to destroy the dollar, well, then the price of those commodities could also take off. That's not growth. That's dollar destruction. So that's not a good thing. So markets are telling you different things. Which one or which ones are going to be right and which ones are going to be wrong. And even to the in some sense with stocks, if it's just a function not of the underlying economy anymore, but just a question of liquidity and flow of funds, well, then this could be a completely different ballgame. And if they're just going to continue to print money, then stocks can keep going up. But that didn't work in Japan, and it has not and does not work in Europe. So why does it work here? And is it always going to work? I think it's not. I think this is going to end badly for everybody. But if you want to get on the gravy train or the free lunch express, be my guest. Just be careful. Now to a couple of the releases. Let's start with the gross domestic product, the GDP. This was released by the Bureau of Economic Analysis, the BEA, a division of the Department of Commerce. Gross domestic product, second quarter 2020, advance estimate and annual update. Real gross domestic product, GDP, decreased at an annual rate of 32.9% in the second quarter of 2020, according to the advance estimate released by the Bureau of Economic Analysis. In the first quarter, real GDP decreased by 5%. The GDP estimate released today is based on source data that are incomplete or subject to further revision by the source agency. The second estimate for the second quarter, based on more complete data, will be released on August 27, 2020. The decrease in real GDP reflected decreases in personal consumption expenditures, PCE, exports, private inventory investment, non-residential fixed investment, residential fixed investment, and state and local government spending that were partly offset by an increase in federal government spending. Imports, which are a subtraction in the calculation of GDP, decreased. The decrease in PCE, again, personal consumption expenditures, reflected decreases in services led by healthcare and goods led by clothing and footwear. The decrease in exports primarily reflected a decrease in goods led by capital goods. The decrease in private inventory investment primarily reflected a decrease in retail led by motor vehicle dealers. The decrease in non-residential fixed investment primarily reflected a decrease in equipment led by transportation equipment, while the decrease in residential investment primarily reflected a decrease in new single-family housing. Now, again, the reason I'm taking the time to go through this report more so, not entirely in its entirety, but we're going to go through the bulk of it, is because this is a historic. Like I have done and have been doing over the past few months in regards to the jobs report, going through that report, because these are historic figures. So I want the audience to grasp what is going on, because this is history in the making. It's not good, but nonetheless, it's history in the making. Current dollar GDP decreased 34.3%. or $2.15 trillion in the second quarter to a level of $19.41 trillion. In the first quarter, GDP decreased by 3.4% or $186.3 billion. So now, current dollar GDP decreased 34.3%, representing $2.15 trillion for the second quarter. First quarter was a decrease of 3.4%, representing $186.3 billion. That is a huge, huge difference. Staggering numbers. The price index for gross domestic purchases decreased 1.5% in the second quarter, in contrast to an increase of 1.4% in the first quarter. The PCE price index decreased 1.9% in contrast to an increase of 1.3%. Excluding food and energy prices, the PCE price index decreased 1.1%. in contrast to an increase of 1.6%. So these are all their funny numbers when it comes to inflation. Current dollar personal income increased $1.39 trillion in the second quarter, compared with an increase of $193.4 billion in the first quarter. The increase in personal income was more than accounted for by an increase in personal current transfer receipts. Notably, government social benefits. That was partly offset by declines in compensation and proprietors' income. Staggering, staggering personal income increase of $1.39 trillion. And the bulk of that, as they note, and rightly so, personal current transfer receipts. That is government transfers. That is the unemployment, that's the increase in food stamps, everything. Otherwise, this figure would have taken a huge bath. Huge bath. Same thing as you see with disposable personal income increasing $1.53 trillion or 42.1% in the second quarter compared with an increase of $157.8 billion or 3.9% in the first quarter. Real disposable personal income increased 44.9% compared with an increase of 2.6%. So if it wasn't for all of this banana republic funny money, these numbers would be terrible. So that's all this is. This is just kicking the can down the road. And we still haven't seen anything yet. You have the moratoriums that are on. We know about the evictions that are waiting in the wings. Those numbers keep going up by the day as far as the analysts and experts are reporting. Because we've been talking about, you know, anywhere from 20 to potentially 28 million. There's some reports out there that it's going to be even bigger than that now. I hope that's not the case. And again, for a little context, just during the great financial crisis a decade ago, at the heart was a residential bubble that was being popped and bursting. We had 10 million Americans who got evicted. That's half of the lower bound of this estimate now. And that took course over a couple of years. Some people think that this could happen over the course of a few months. 20 to 28 million people. That's staggering. That's emotional. And what are you going to do? These are businesses, housing, developments, landlords. This isn't charity. It's not charity. It's a business. Yeah, you got your moratoriums. You're doing what you're doing for a few months, trying to get a handle on everything. But now it's time. Hey, they have to pay the bank too. Landlords have to pay the bank. The property managers have to pay the bank. That's why they're renting out the property. That's the name of the game. But this is going to get very heated. It's going to get very personal. And what's going to happen on the other side of this too, right? Because you have landlords. I think on a net-net position, they don't want to evict anybody. They want a good-paying tenant. But they got bills to pay too. And if they're not getting paid, then they can't pay their bills. And then the bank or somebody's going to come after them and take their property, go after other assets, what have you. Not a good situation. So the evictions are coming. Now, what to do? How am I going to find other tenants? What are these guys going to do? Are they going to lower their rent to attract new tenants? Maybe. And depending on where you are, you're already starting to see a drop in some rents because you're having the exodus out of some big cities. But is that par for the course or is that temporary? We're going to see how that plays out over the coming months. What about a security deposit? Maybe the typical arrangement is I need one month down for a security deposit. What happens if they now say, the landlords now say, well, you're going to have to give me 2 months or 3 months or 4 months of a security deposit? Well, who's going to be able to come up with that? But the landlords, property managers, rightly so, have to protect themselves and prepare for a potential second, third wave because there's a ton of uncertainty that exists. We have not seen anything yet. We saw a rush of liquidity, alphabet soup of emergency facilities from the Federal Reserve, an extra 600 here, an extra 1200 there, all to do what they can to kick the can down the road as far as possible. The day of reckoning is still coming. A vaccine is not going to solve this, unfortunately, especially not one that's going to come out of an Operation Warp Speed. All right, it's just not. All right, it's not a panacea. You have a currency crisis, you have sovereign debt crises, you have the eviction moratoriums lifted, you have a whole host of issues. The printing press is not a panacea, and a vaccine is not going to be a panacea for all of this either. It's not a light switch. Oh, let's all go get vaccinated, and then, boom, all of the restaurants are going to open back up. Everybody's going to go back to work. No more working from home. That's just not realistic. That's not how this is going to unfold. These are structural changes that are going to last for a very, very long time. Get that wrapped around your head. This is not going away anytime soon. On to the initial jobless claims figures. For the week ending July 25th, we have 1.434 million Americans filing for initial claims. This is an increase of 12,000 over the prior week of July 18th, which was revised upward as well to 1.422 million Americans. This is the second consecutive week of a week-over-week increase, unfortunately, in initial jobless claims. And again, this is initial jobless claims. And I'm sure as we continue to make our way through the greatest depression, which we are in the midst of, these are starting to capture a lot of higher paying jobs. The lower hanging fruit, if you will, the service sector jobs, minimum wage, lower wages, what have you, those are the ones to lose their jobs the fastest, the quickest, the earliest in this process. But now, as reality starts to sink in, it's more of those white-collar corporate office jobs that are starting to become affected. This is typical. This is the process. We are in a recession. We are in a technical and official recession. That's how this plays out when it comes to jobs and the professions of how it goes. Lower hanging fruit, and then it makes its way up the corporate ladder, if you will. And again, we have not seen anything yet. For the week ending July 18th, there's a lag on this for continuing claims. We have 17,018,000. This is an increase over the previous week, which would have been the week ending July 11th, an increase of 867,000. So these numbers are not moving in the right direction when it comes to initial claims and continuing claims. Now, we still have those other emergency measures that are in place. We still have the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program in place. We still have the Pandemic Emergency Unemployment Compensation in place, at least for a little while longer. And of course, we're waiting to see what Congress does or does not do in regards to these programs. But for the total number, and again, there's a couple week lag on this, so this is going to be for the week ending July 11th. When you take it all up, total it all up, it's 30.2 million. 30.2 million Americans are still receiving some form of unemployment insurance. Now, from its week over week, which would have been ending July 4th, that is a decrease of 1.6 million Americans. So that's a good thing. Again, that's that downward trajectory on that. Fewer people collecting some form of unemployment insurance. That's good. But it lags a couple weeks still. So what are we going to see next week and the following? And of course, next Friday is going to be the first Friday of August. That's going to be the jobs report. So if we have a lot of those more white-collar jobs, higher-paying jobs, starting to fall by the wayside, that should be picked up. And of course, we still have the distortionary effects of the PPP loans of employers bringing back employees so that those loans can become forgiven, that they can become grants. So again, it's very difficult, unfortunately, to get a full picture as to what's taking place. That's why we have to look at other data points. That's why we have to use our common sense. We have to look at those moratoriums. We have to look at the commercial real estate. We have to look at jobs not coming back or office jobs not coming back, at least not to the degree that they were here before, or people not going to the office because, well, you're just as productive from home, maybe more so. That has downstream consequences. You have Dunkin' brands, Dunkin' Donuts. They announced that they are going to be closing 800 stores. Well, that's no surprise, is it? How many people go to a Dunkin' on their way to work? grab a cup of coffee, a donut, a bagel, a muffin. Well, if you're not going into the office, you're not going to Dunkin'. And now you just have to extrapolate that across the spectrum of so many other businesses. And that's a major business. How many mom and pop shops are around? People like to shop local. They'd rather go to a local coffee shop on their way to work. Well, I'm not going to work. I don't have to go into the office, so I don't need to go by here every day like I do and buy a cup of coffee and a bagel and a donut, etc. We haven't even seen anything yet. This is just the funny money glossing over everything, kicking the can down the road. And there's no free lunch. There's no free lunch because on the other side of this, you're going to have higher taxes. You're going to have inflation with a stagnant economy, which is, of course, stagflation. And God forbid, but if they keep this going, we could have hyperinflation even in this country. And of course, inflation knows no boundaries or borders, so it'll be exported around the world, which is what we're already starting to see. We see the total economic collapse of country after country. This is just getting started. There's no leadership. There's no honesty. There's no truth-telling. And that's not going to change anytime soon. Because the other interesting point that we saw this morning, you get the GDP figure that comes across at 8:30, and then a handful of minutes later, you get Thunder Thumbs tweeting out, maybe we should delay the election? Question mark. I'm paraphrasing. Now, do you think Thunder Thumbs would have tweeted that out this morning if GDP, instead of it being a negative 32.9%, was a positive 32.9%? I don't think so. If anything, he would have tweeted out, let's move it up. It's a fantastic number. I might get reelected on this one, a positive 32.9%. But no, negative number. Let's try to distract with some tweet that's not going to go anywhere because the president doesn't have the authority to do this. Set by Congress and the states, of course, manage their own elections. But that's the point. That's the point because if it was plus 32.9%, he would have came out there and they would have had a huge press conference like they did during the previous jobs report, which, of course, if you go through it like we do here, it was not that pretty, but you get a good headline number. You got to cheerlead, you got to brag, you got to cheerlead, you got to brag. Doesn't do anybody any good, but that's the politics of it. We need to be rising above the politics because this is going to get very, very real for a lot of people, and it already is, because there was another very bleak and quite heartbreaking survey that came out by the Census Bureau, where you have some 30 million Americans claiming that they are short of food supply. They are not getting enough food. 30 million Americans. I'm trying to think off the top of my head how that went, how the question was asked. Are you often without food or are you sometimes without food? I think were the two categories. And if you added those up in aggregate, it was 30 million Americans. That's almost 10% of the country, folks. And on the flip side of this, you have somebody like a Jeff Bezos with Amazon stock and all these other big shots, these multi-billionaires, making more money than they've ever made before. This is not going to end well. And again, I don't demonize wealth. You make a better mousetrap, more power to you. That's what this country's supposed to be about. That's what free market capitalism is supposed to be about. You create the better mousetrap, be rewarded. But when it comes from a printing press, when it comes from these buddy-buddy policies and regulations that protects the big boys and prevents others from entering the market or makes it much more difficult because of the hurdle costs, I have a big problem with it. And when you have billions and billions and trillions being printed out of thin air and you have 30 million Americans with not enough food, something's not right. And this is why you're going to lead to these off with their head moments like I discussed the other day with those statistics from the French Revolution with the income inequality, with the income inequality that we have here today in this country. And it's even worse in the United States now than it was in France in the 18th century. That's not a good statistic, by the way. This is just getting started. And then lastly, with the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, still somewhat plateauing, actually gave back a few billion dollars on a week-over-week basis. But as we know from Jay Powell, they're going to do whatever it takes. They're going to continue with their pace of purchases when it comes to treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. So this number is going to go up. This has just been a little bit of a plateauing effect for the past few weeks. But once Congress comes out with another trillion-dollar, probably multi-trillion-dollar spending bill over the next couple of days here, then this balance sheet is again going to go to the moon. So I will keep you updated as we do here. No GDP, no jobs. There you have it. I will catch you here tomorrow. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.